All right, let's lock up the Oregon Fuel Injection Hotline. Get our view from the middle. You can find all he's up to for USA Today via the newsstand or online, usatoday.com. Become a follower on Twitter. Use the handle at George Schroeder. George Schroeder, how are you today, sir?
I'm here. Can you hear me?
Oh, yeah. Now I can hear you fine. I'm live on location, so I thought it was me. You know, the conversation couples have. It's not you, it's me. I get that a lot.
I hear you. I'm live on location, too, so it works out pretty well.
Okay. You know, I saw you posted something on Twitter. It was over the weekend as Oregon was kind of, the basketball team, was taking apart Colorado. You reiterated something you'd hit on during the season. While crazy things do happen in the tournament, you think this Duck team kind of has what it takes to make a deep run into March, if not April? When you watch them, what jumps off the page that you like about this group?
Well, let me correct you. I think they could win it all.
Okay.
The qualifier, which you mentioned, is, and so it's a mild correction. You basically got the gist of it. You're right. But the qualifier is there are no guarantees in March and or April. No guarantees. I mean, you can have a bad shooting night and go home, right?
Right.
You can have a couple of quick fouls to the wrong guy and be in trouble. But this team is pretty deep, very athletic. And what I really like is their mental makeup and their mental moxie. Well, frankly, if somebody does get a couple quick fouls and it would sink other teams, they've got other guys that can rise up and play. And they've got the mental makeup where it just feels like not much faces them. And a lot of teams aren't like that. So, I mean, I think they're really tough. And I think they grew a ton in the tournament last year. They're a year older. They're a year better. But I think there's a mental growing up that clearly happened last year. And then it's even happened as the year's gone on. And I just – you look around, and I don't see a pure favorite in this year, you know, at least not in late February. I don't see a pure favorite that you go, well, there's the team, and it's those guys and everybody else. I mean, there's not one of those teams or three of those teams. You know, I don't think Oregon can find its way probably into the top, you know, the top line as a one seed, although that could happen. But I think sitting at a two, they're as dangerous as anybody in the tournament. And you know, I might ride them all the way through in my bracket. I think they're as good as anybody.
No, they've got the ingredients. I think the best thing I saw from you on Twitter, by the way, a belated happy 20th anniversary. I saw a picture of George. I saw a picture of George on his wedding day, and I want to know. Nice job on the two-tone tux. Was that your call?
Yeah, that's
embarrassing. Was that your call?
My wife,
by
the way, is clearly a saint. that's the big takeaway from having a 20th anniversary. Whatever it was that I had on that day was theoretically stylish at the time.
No, I loved it. The two-toned. I was wondering if that was your call or your then-fiancé, now wife, who said this is the tux you're going to wear on our wedding day.
That was my call. I remember enough to think that I was the one that thought that was a good-looking deal. You know, I thought it would stand the test of time, and clearly 20 years later, you're pinging me on it, so it didn't.
No, it was an awesome picture. So today, the 37th anniversary of the Miracle on Ice. We all know the story. College kids taking on, in essence, maybe the greatest professional team ever assembled, the Soviet Red Army. You were obviously incredibly young 37 years ago. I was 19. But I'm kind of curious, growing up that time in Arkansas, kind of what memories do you have of that incredible circumstance?
Well, it's not exactly a hockey town or a hockey state, you know.
Right.
So, but that didn't really matter. This was all about beating the Big Red Machine, CCTP, across their chest, and nobody thought they could beat them. And you know, the other thing to remember is it came in the shadow of the Cold War and so much else going on, and there were legitimate questions, I think, in Americans' minds as to, you know, can we beat these Soviets? And I don't mean in hockey. I mean in everything.
Yeah.
And no, I think that was a big, big deal, at least, you know, at least momentarily, in terms of, you know, lifting the spirits of the country. I remember just having seen it. Obviously, I know that it was tape delayed and everything else. I just remember seeing it, and I don't know that I actually saw the tape delayed but live broadcast when it happened, but I remember the next day just everybody being, you know, more excited than you could imagine over, you know, the fact, you know, we didn't know in my part of the country, we weren't sure exactly how you scored in hockey, and I'm kidding, but, you know, it didn't matter. We knew we beat the Big Red Machine. We also knew that they were way better at hockey than our guys were, certainly our college guys, you know, and the NHL guys weren't allowed to play at the time.
Right.
So, and their guys were essentially pros. They just played for the country and got paid. You know, they were essentially military. And so it was clearly kind of pros versus college guys.
No, that was the best part about it. I mean, obviously, I was in the outskirts of New York, and there was really no build-up to the game. And then it happened, and then it became the biggest thing in the world.
Yeah.
Talking with George Schroeder, USA Today, I'm always amazed that they call it the way too early predictions for next year's college football season. But considering where you live and Oklahoma State bringing back this killer trio at quarterback, running back, and receiver, for some reason I've read like two or three stories that they get mentioned a lot. You hearing a buzz in your state over next season already about what this Cowboy team might do?
Yeah, you are. Now, I'll say this. It's tempered both in-state and I think nationally by the fact that a lot of people still think that the best team in the Big 12 is also in-state. You know, it's Oklahoma, and they think, you know, that Oklahoma's maybe, even though they've lost some significant pieces, they bring back Baker Mayfield, and they think, well, hey, that's maybe the one Big 12 team that could make a potential run at the playoffs. So Oklahoma State buzz is tempered by that. But you're right. I mean, it starts with Mason Rudolph, who's a really, really good quarterback that a lot of people haven't maybe known because they haven't been in the national spotlight as part of the playoff conversation. And it starts with him. He's really good. And, you know, and do they have a run game? Yeah, I think they do, which they haven't had for a while. Justice Hansen can really play, and they always have great receivers. And you could throw all their receivers out today, and Oklahoma State would have a couple of NFL-ready receivers tomorrow. So, there's definitely some buzz building with Oklahoma State. I think it's, I think there's a little bit of let's wait and see what happens is going on with them.
Right.
But I think that would be a fair thing to say about anybody at this point, frankly.
Alabama now has their fifth offensive coordinator since 2011. Brian
yep.
Daboll, you know, we've known the names Lane Kiffin, Sarkisian, going back to Doug Nussmeier, and, you know, this guy's mostly been in the NFL, most recently with the Patriots. He hasn't been in college since he worked for Saban at Michigan State. Kind of an interesting hire. What do you know about this guy?
Not a whole lot, other than he's got the Saban-Belichick connections. From what I understand, they don't want to change a whole lot. They still want to but they want to run more pro set stuff. And I will tell you this, I think it's an interesting move for the Jalen Hurts era. Now, this is almost sacrilege because the true freshman quarterback was, you know, pretty good for them this year. And he definitely injected a different level of danger for defenses with his legs. But we saw late in the season and certainly against Clemson that his passing was so suspect that it really hampered them and made them one-dimensional. And against better teams that could actually score on them, it caused them some significant problems. And so, that they were one-dimensional. So I think it's interesting that Saban's bringing a guy who's got more of a pro-style background. Even if you still want to spread it out and play fast, you'd think that he wants to implement a little bit more of a return somehow to kind of what Saban did before Lane Kiffin had Blake Sims and before they went full meal deal with it this year. And I think it bears some watching to see what happens with their quarterback situation. I don't know that Jalen Hurts, maybe he's going to get a lot better in the pass game, okay? That's what everybody
right.
hopes, although that doesn't always happen with a dual-threat quarterback. A lot of times a dual-threat quarterback doesn't get a ton better in the pass game. He is what he is. But maybe he's going to get a lot better. If not, don't be surprised if all that, you know, and this is sacrilege right now, but don't be surprised if 8 or 9 months from now we're going, yeah, that Jalen Hurts thing was a 1-year deal, and they're playing the kid from Hawaii, or they're playing somebody else. You know, I can't remember his name, but the kid who's supposedly the next Marcus Mariota enrolled early, just like Jalen Hurts did a year ago. But he enrolled early, and he'll go through spring ball with them. So I don't want to overdo that. I'm not completely sold that they are sold on Jalen Hurts as a guy, especially with this particular move at offense coordinator. So I don't know.
No, this just makes for a more intriguing, I guess, spring for Alabama.
Absolutely.
All right. One more thought, since we're on a little bit of a short leash today. Next month, college football's rules committee is going to meet. We know in recent years, targeting has become very prominent. Issues regarding interpretation, ejections. You wrote about a possible tweak. So what exactly are they talking about that would maybe allow the refs more leeway while remaining as acting as a deterrent to dangerous hits?
Right. Well, I mean, so they expanded the replay ability, last year. And so this year, what they're going to allow you to do is, if you can't confirm that it's targeting from the replay booth, but you can't overturn it, then in that case, what's going to happen is the 15-yard penalty will stand, but the player won't be ejected. And so it's dialing it back a little bit and giving a little bit of benefit of the doubt to the player. And I think that's a pretty good way to go about it. And so I think that's a good deal. So here's the deal. Let me try that one more time. If they basically just say the play stands, they do the review, the play stands, then that's what I'm talking about.
Right.
They can either overturn the call, and in case there's no targeting and no ejection of the player, or they can say, we have confirmed the call on the field. If you can confirm it, then it's still the penalty and the player is still ejected. But if it's just the play stands, then in that case there's going to be a middle ground now that is going to go to the benefit of that offending player, which I think is a good rule, because a rule change, and hopefully that'll get passed, because we've seen that it's such an all-over-the-board type of situation in terms of how it gets called inconsistently. It varies by people. It varies, by the collision. It's such a tough thing that we've seen guys get ejected when we maybe all thought they shouldn't have. And I think this will take care of some of that.
I think it's a pretty good rule,
and I hope it does ultimately pass.
No, I agree. If a guy's going to be kicked out of a game, it should be clear-cut. There shouldn't be a lot of gray area there. All righty. You can catch up with George at the newsstand. Pick up a copy of USA Today online, usatoday.com. Follow on Twitter. The handle is at George Schroeder. George, always a pleasure. I would say travel safe, and we'll catch up next week.
Sounds good. Thanks, man.
All right, take it easy.